We're continuing. We said Ish Yehudi, Ish Yemini. We said, let's review. He has the strength of Yehuda, the strength of Binyamin, the descendants of Rachel with their capacity to withhold, the strength of Leah with their capacity to go out and pray and yell and shake the heavens like Leah herself did. We discussed that his numerical value, Mordechai, equals Leah plus Rachel. We discussed that Shimi ben Gera was the one who should have been killed by David because of his cursing David as David was leaving Jerusalem. And David held back. David said, maybe he's in the right. And because he let Shimi live, that's why we have Mordechai, and that's how Mordechai is aligned. The Megillah says, Ben Shimi, as though he was the direct grandson of Shimi, because the Megillah is pointing out to us that he is technically a direct outcome of that Shimi, which David let live. We quoted the Yalkut Shimoni, that Arubatam Tikach, that Yishai tells David, you go take responsibility for the tribe of Benjamin. And this idea that Yehuda and Benjamin are always working together begins with Yehuda taking responsibility for Binyamin, continues with the story of David taking over where Shaul does not stand up to Goliath, to Goliath. So David does. That's the mutual responsibility. It continues with their relationship in the building of the temple, the divide of the temple between their two territories. It continues where the rest of Israel is exiled and Yehuda and Binyamin stick it out together, and it continues still today. And that those two strengths, when they forge, because each one takes responsibility for the other, so those two strengths are the strengths of Mordechai, Ish Yehudi and Ish Yemini. Mordechai, who instates the mitzvah of Mishloach Manot, unity in Am Yisrael, lech kenoset kol ha-Yehudim, and that's the strength that will be victorious in our Megillah, Ish Yehudi. Chazal tell us that Mordechai in his generation was like Moshe in his generation. Moshe is called Ha'ish Moshe Anav Meod, and Mordechai is called Ish Yehudi. We discussed that the term Yehudi means monotheist. The term Yehudi also means having the capacity to give thanks. And those are the hallmarks of a Jewish person, that he knows he's a monotheist, that he knows to give thanks. And we discussed that we were only called Yehudim once we approached the exile. Among the pagans, that's where we were identified as Yehudim. Ish Yehudi Haya Bishushan Habira. He showed up in Shushan, the capital. And so this is part of God's plan that he should be in the capital. The capital was shifted to Shushan. And this was part of the plan so that Mordechai would be prepared. He'd be right there for the redemption. And that's part of the picture that's being painted throughout the Megillah, how there's a God's plan over here. Nothing happens by coincidence. Mordechai is already in the capital before all the problems start. Hayai was already there, prepared for redemption. Hashem set up the scene so that redemption would come. Haya, Chazal tells anyone it says about him, Haya, it means he once was, but he saw a new world in his life. And this is one of the great messages we see over and over again in Tanakh, that people suffer complete destruction in their lives. Noach comes out to a world that's decimated. There's nothing. He has to plant everything from scratch. But he builds and he sees a new world. Eov, Job, all of his life was destroyed, but he sees a new life. And the same is true with Mordechai. Mordechai sees his whole life destroyed, but he sees a renaissance, a reawakening. So yes, he has the moments where the decree is out, Ahasuerus rules the world, the decree is signed, and the law in Persia is that you're never allowed to repeal a decree. When Mordechai will want to repeal the decree, Mordechai will have to send messengers with swords, and those messengers will catch up with the first messengers and say, hey, the king sent me to tell you something. And the guy will say, say what? And he'll slit his throat. The second set of messengers kill the first messengers. Because in Persia, in Shushan, the law was that you're not allowed to repeal a decree. They had to make a new decree. So the new decree was that the king is going to back the Jews, and the Jews are allowed to fight back, and they're allowed to kill all their enemies, and they have the king's backing. But they never repeal the first decree, because they can't. Right. They kill the messengers of the first decree, and wherever they go, they tell the Jews, you fight, and the king backs
you. What's the connection to killing the messenger?
because the messengers shouldn't keep giving the message to new cities. Meaning the messengers, let's say they covered a radius of 30 miles.
Oh,
They didn't finish giving the message to everyone, so they killed them. Huh. And the rest of the countries were told that they have a right to defend and to kill all their enemies.
That's the phrase.
Wait, were the messengers, were they had to deliver the message? Once they found out that it was
That was the law. You see it in Daniel. The law in Persia was you couldn't repeal a decree.
It could have.
Once you got a decree, you had to go.
Taking the decree from them. I guess it was verbal. I don't know. Anyway.
Once they make a decree, you can't unmake it.
That's one of those things that are hard to rectify with the...
Once the platform is put into motion, it's hard to go back.
I don't know. It's a good question. I never even thought of it. What were the Jewish casualties when you killed 75,000 of your enemies?
Doesn't say, right.
It had to be that. So you could think it would have been.
Right.
Wasn't nothing.
Asher hoglam Yerushalayim. We're going on to the next pasuk. And the stress over here is that everyone else was taken by force. And Mordechai went voluntarily. Mordechai was considered so great that Nebuchadnezzar's men wouldn't touch him. And this goes back 80 years earlier, 70 years earlier. And even so, Hoglah, he exiled himself. He went to join the Jewish people, just as the prophet Jeremiah did. Vayhi omein, he adopts Hadassah. So here, we have to realize, like we discussed earlier, that the whole Megillah is Esther. It's all in hiding. Is Mordechai his real name? No, his real name is Malachi, my king. But Ahasuerus doesn't want him named Malachi. That's going to be the name in the book. So he's called Mordechai.
It's a Persian god, right?
Marduk, whatever. So that would fit, just like Daniel was given the name Belshazzar.
Belshazzar was like the wicked king.
Right.
He was given that.
His name was also Belshazzar.
Daniel was given the name Belshazzar, which means his wisdom comes from Babylonian god Baal, as opposed to Daniel, I'm being judged by God. Nebuchadnezzar doesn't want that, so he changes his name to Belshazzar.
This Megillah was written by Ahasuerus?
No, the Megillah was written by Mordechai and Esther with Ruach HaKodesh, but, as we discussed last class, it was written with the understanding that it was being inserted in the Persian history books.
So they
had to be careful not to overtly write anything bad about Ahasuerus.
History is written by the victors, right?
So Esther was green like a Hadassah. Esther was not beautiful at all. Esther was green, yes. She looked like people look when they vomit. Yes, Esther was not beautiful. She was an old lady and she was green. But
it's in the eye of the beholder.
So
yeah, for every occasion you have
Esther is an orphan. When her mother gets pregnant, so her father dies, and when her mother gives birth, her mother dies, and she is adopted by Mordechai. Yes.
So when we as Jews name our daughters Hadass or Hadassah. Well, no, Esther refers to the hero of the story, whereas Hadassah refers to just the traditional Jewish name, Hadassah. What are we making a reference to? Why do we use Hadassah as a Jewish name? How is it that if Esther, who won the favor of everyone she saw, her name was Hadassah, and I want to know what's the significance of the name Hadassah if it isn't something that represents some sort of natural beauty.
So Hadass is the branch which the prophet Zechariah sees growing around the horse is standing with the angel Beina Hadassim. Why is the great Redeemer coming among Hadassim? Because Hadassim is a remez for the Tzaddikim. The Tzaddikim, it's an allusion to the Tzaddikim. The Tzaddikim are called Hadassim. So too, Hadassah is an allusion to the idea that she's a Tzaddiket. And it could be her name was Hadassah. Chazal have different opinions as to whether her real name was Esther and her nickname was Hadassah, her code name. In Tanakh, we find that people had many names, and one was the name they went by, and the other names referred to certain attributes they had. So Moshe has many names. Tuvia, Yekutiel, he has many names. But the one he is known by is Moshe, the one who led the Jewish people out of Egypt. Moshe, the one who drew out. Esther, so Chazal have a disagreement. Was her prime name Esther? And then Hadassah is a descriptory term where she's described as like a Hadass, either because she was so pious or because she wasn't beautiful at all, or because just like a Hadass has two natures. On the one hand, it smells good. On the other hand, it tastes bitter. So too, Esther had an aspect where she was so beautiful and so great for the Jewish people, but she was so tough and so bitter to our enemies. Look at what she accomplished. You know, she had that balance. Different understandings among Chazal. What's the stress when we call her Esther and Hadassah? Okay, maybe Esther is because her whole style was in seclusion. Initially, she doesn't tell Ahasuerus who she is, and then later on, she doesn't tell Ahasuerus what she's planning at the parties. You know, that could be that's the stress of Esther. Different understandings among Chazal. Yeah.
How did she win the beauty contest?
Like, says she was Noset Chain. What does Noset Chain mean? Doesn't say she was Yafa. Well, she had charm. Charm is when you don't have beauty. If you have beauty, you don't need charm. Yeah. In Hebrew, chayin is different than in English.
That I know, but does it automatically negate? You know, it's like, you know, well, she has nice eyes. It's like, you know, is it automatically kind of saying, you know, not particularly beautiful? Can't
let's look at the text.
Both with, no, I'm just.
We'll see. I'm saying, let's
language.
Look at the text. Yeah. We'll see it in the text. Pasuk Yudalef uvchol yom vayom. Okay, so she had Sheva Nerot, so she could count the days. Think about it. They're in a harem. They're closed off from the world. She has no clue what day it is. Vaishanea, he treated her differently. How did he treat her differently? Two opinions among Chazal. One opinion is that he brought her the best pork. Another opinion is that he brought her Jewish food, just like Daniel and his friends. So it says that Hey Guy gave her preferential treatment. So my brother once pointed out to me that it's very logical. Here you have Hey Guy. He's dealing with a bunch of spoiled brats. All these girls who are thinking, I'm going to be the queen. And they're treating him like dirt. And here you have Esther, the one mature one among the bunch, who's not interested in being queen. And she treats him like a decent human being. So of course he liked her better than everyone else. So that was my brother's shot, but I thought it makes a lot of sense. So,
were they all spoiled brats, or were they, because they were all just kidnapped. They were all from Hodu Lakush. They were all kidnapped and
right,
kept in.
They're given whatever they want, whatever you want. They were given servants. They were given royal treatment, whatever they wanted.
Really?
Yeah, whatever food you wanted, whatever maids you wanted, whatever perfume you wanted. They spent 6 months in a bath, and then 6 months in another bath. Just so their skin would be soft and silky and hairless. So every day, Mordechai would walk back and forth to see how Esther's doing. So, Bechol yom vayom Mordechai mitalech lifnei chatzar beit hanashim. Every day, he'd walk outside that gate to see what's going on. And there's a beautiful pshat here. Now, the Gemara says, how could it be that this tzedekes will end up with this derelict? How could that be? Must be that God has something in mind. So the question is, many times we see tzaddikim who suffer, and we don't say, oh, it must be a sign something good is going to happen. How come? So I saw the Magen Midvar on a different part of the Megillah explains a very fundamental concept. The Gemara in Brachos says, tzaddik v'tov lo, tzaddik amur. Tzaddik v'ra lo, tzaddik sheinu gamur. The Gemara asks, why is it you have tzaddikim who they have a good life and you have tzaddikim who suffer? So the Gemara says, if one is a complete tzaddik, he's perfect, so then he has a good life. Because the only reason tzaddikim don't have a good life is because they're not perfect. And God says, if I'd make it good for them, so then they'd use it the wrong way. If they had a lot of money, who knows what they'd do with it? If they had, if they're not yet perfect, so then they don't deserve. It's not right for them to have a good life in this world. That's one answer in the Gemara. So they might be tzaddikim; they're much better than everyone else. But if they haven't perfected themselves, they're not fit to have a good life in this world. That's the Magen Duvna's explanation of a Gemara in Brachos. Now, according to that, we can understand what Mordechai is saying here. Mordechai says, I know my Esther. She's a prophetess. She was my wife. She grew up by me. She is a complete tzaddik. How could it be she's suffering this way? Must be there's a heavenly plan behind it. And that's, Mordechai could say that. So Mordechai is waiting to see, okay, what does God have in mind? I believe this is an important attitude in general. When things are out of our control, so sometimes you have to say, what does God have in mind? Even if you're not a complete tzaddik. I told you guys the story about when the army was going to draft me. Yeah, okay, I was in a certain program, and the program was finished when I was here studying yeshiva, and then they told me to come in and they'll sign the papers. I come in, and the corporal or whatever it is who's supposed to sign the papers tells me, go down to the secretary downstairs and she'll give you the papers you need. And something didn't sound right, like why isn't he giving me the papers? So I go down and I ask the secretary of floor beneath, he sent me down here to get the papers. And she says, you just wait on that bench, you'll get your papers. So the way she said it just didn't sound right. So I said, what do you mean? So she said, you know full well what I mean. Hiding from the army all this time, running away, not answering our calls. The car is on its way over here. We're going to put you in prison for a good long time for all this time you've spent hiding from us. So I said, I think there's a mistake. So she said, no mistake, buddy. You go sit on that bench and wait. And I didn't know, this wasn't our conversation. I'd met him a month earlier and he said, I just got to give you one more set of papers. Come back. I'll give you the papers and we're done. So I said, did he trick me? It was like, did he file one thing and tell me another thing? I don't know. So I'm sitting on that bench and I'm thinking, I think those were the days before cell phones. So I'm sitting on the bench thinking, do I get one last phone call? My wife's going to wonder where I am. I was supposed to come home. I thought I was coming here just to get a few papers and going back home. And I'm sitting there and I remember thinking just this. This is out of my hands. I have no clue what happened or what's going to happen. But let's see what God has in mind for me. Sometimes you have to be able to take life as a spectator. Yeah, there are certain things that are completely out of your control, and you have to be able to calmly realize, okay, this is not within my realm. I cannot control this. So now I'm just going to have to deal as best as I can. There's nothing else I can do. So then the story was, like 10 minutes later, I walked over and I said, look, I know you're busy. But I really think there's a misunderstanding. The guy upstairs sent me down here. Do me a favor, give him a call before you send me off to prison. Just make sure I'm the right guy, I think there's a misunderstanding. So she was nice enough to oblige. She made the phone call and then she said, you're right. You're not the guy who's supposed to go to prison. We'll get you your papers. Say that. So, who knows where I would have ended up. I didn't know. I spent those 10 minutes, mamash, wondering, okay, what does God have in mind? So I'm just saying that's an important tool to sometimes be able to step back and say, some things are out of my control. Let's watch how this is going to play itself out. Mordechai would always come to the courtyard. And Esther would ask him her questions. And he would watch over Esther. And he would ensure that they wouldn't make her drink any kind of potent or something that would harm her. And day after day, he'd come and check out how Esther was doing. Now, the strength of Mordechai is that he doesn't miss a day. One day he must have been tired. One day he must have felt not so good. It's very easy to say, Esther's doing fine. She's been there already months and every day she's okay. What's the big deal? I won't come today. No, every day of the year. Shabbos, Yom Tov, every day of the year Mordechai was there to see how she's doing. And the Ribbono Shel Olam said, you worried about one person, I swear by your life, you will ultimately take care of the whole nation. And that's why the Megillah concludes with Doresh Tov Le'amo V'Dover Shalom Le'Kol Zaro, that Mordechai was responsible to seek out the good of all the people and seek out the peace for all his children. And that's the greatness of Mordechai. And this is a concept that we see over and over and over again, where God checks us out with the little things. The little things are Moshe Rabbeinu caring for that one sheep that went astray, David HaMelech caring for that one sheep that went astray, and Mordechai is being consistent day after day without excuses to see how Esther's doing. The Gemara discusses what the different oils were that they'd be with. The Gemara says, notice how the Megillah is honest, and even though the Megillah is going to tell us a lot of bad things about Ahasuerus, the Megillah also tells us what good things you could learn from him. It says Ahasuerus would have a girl come in every night, and in the morning she'd go back to the second harem. So Rav Yochanan says, you see, there was something good about him. By day he wasn't with the girls. By day he was productive as king. So that's a praise of Ahasuerus. Chazal weren't scared to say something good about a man like him. Very often people think that if someone's bad, everything's got to be bad about him. No, because I'll say sometimes. Yeah, even Esav, right. Right. Okay. Back to our Megillah. So Esther finds favor by everyone who sees her. So Chazal say everyone who saw her thought she was from his country. That's very interesting. That's what we like, what we're familiar with.
What?
It says, Esther found favor in the eyes of everyone who saw her. So the Gemara says, anyone who saw her was sure she was from his country.
She was a charmer. No, in a good way. I mean, she could probably use her head and found some point of commonality.
So Chazal say she fulfilled the verse, Umtzachem v'sechelto b'nei Elokim v'adam. The verse says one should find favor in heaven and in earth. When it says, Beinei kol roeha, all who perceived her liked her, that means in heaven and in earth. You have people who want to be nice to everyone here, but they smear over a lot of their obligations towards heaven. So that's not good. You have people who want to be good towards heaven, and then they smear over their responsibilities down below. So what if I'm trampling over other people? That's not good either. The Pasuk says in Mishlei, Umtza chen v'sechel tov, a person should find charm, chen, and sechel tov, and be deemed intelligent, b'nei Elokim, in the eyes of heaven and man. So that's a very hard balance. Sometimes it seems like the Torah contradictory. No, that's the great balance, and that's what Esther was able to do, b'nei kol ro'eha. So Esther was taken forcibly into Ahasuerus, and the month was Teves. Now that's very interesting. Chazal say, why does the Megillah bother telling us it was Teves? Because Teves is a cold month. And when it's a cold month, so it's more natural that people appreciate body heat, that Ahasuerus would appreciate being with her. So you stop and you ask yourself, why is that important? Why does the Megillah have to tell us that? Why did Chazal have to tell us that? I think that this brings us back to another idea. It says that when Yosef is abducted by the Ishmaelim, so he's carried on a wagon with spices. Who cares? Yosef is being taken naked to be sodomized for life. But great, he has spices on the way. Who cares? That's what he was being taken for. So I think
Yosef was sodomized by
he
just
could be
that
sold
was the goal.
Whatever it was,
right?
Yeah, it's not pretty.
That was the intent. God took care of it. That's not how it played itself out. But as far as he knew, that was the intent. So here, Chazal tell us an idea. Even when things go bad, if we pay close attention, certain things go right in an uncanny way. And that's God's way of saying, hey, I'm with you. As bad as you think things are going, I'm still with you. A few years ago, we had a terrorist attack in Merkaz Arav. And a few of my friends were killed. We had some of the students of Merkaz Arav, some of the students of the high school. were gunned down as they were studying. They weren't doing anything. I mean, some of the kids were mamash sitting, looking up books. And afterwards, we had a class, and I mentioned then that one of the most difficult things about something like this is that you feel like in those moments, this animal had a decision who would live and who would die. It's very hard to feel like God controlled those seconds. You had a few seconds where some people made it out of the library alive, some people didn't, and it's hard to feel like this was God's hand. And it's not only so when a terrorist attacks, it's also so when a person has difficulty in their life. Suddenly they feel like the forces that be are running everything. And that's one of the great challenges. Avram and Sarah, every doctor for fertility told them they could never have kids. Never have kids. And then God shows them that it's not that way. What we have to remember when tragedy strikes, I wish us all that we don't have to have that often in our life, but we have to remember that God's running the show even then. And one of the things that God does when tragedy strikes is that he gives us little signs that he's there with us. And that could be Yosef sitting in a caravan of stinky, filthy Yishmaelim who are always carrying filthy, stinky hides to Egypt. And this is the one time that they're carrying spices, something which they don't normally trade in. Just so that Yosef has the spices. So that Yosef, if he's willing to open his eyes, will see Hashem says, I'm with you here too. And the same is true of Esther. There are little things that Hashem does to show her, I'm with you. And we're going to see this throughout the Megillah, that Esther suffers. As much as Esther is the heroine of the Megillah is really a tragedy. She ends up stuck with this guy for 14 years. Yeah, they're going to have a kid together. She can never go back to her original husband, Mordechai. It's a tragedy. But through this tragedy, we have a great redemption to the point where Mashiach could have potentially come, to the point where the Second Temple is rebuilt and the Jews re-enter the land of Israel. And this is the source of it all. But throughout the suffering, there are little signs, I'm there with you. And we will continue Be'ezrat Hashem tomorrow night.